Blog Talk Radio.
That's enough of that. How's it going, everybody? And welcome to another edition of the Third Man In Radio on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/thethirdmanin. I am Chris Block, writer, editor, and guy of thethirdmanin.com/puckchatter.com. And it is Tuesday night, October 4th, 2011, 8:01 here in Chicago. Previewing the Blackhawks season, 2011-12 is upon us. Friday night, the Blackhawks open up in Dallas. The venue switches to the United Center on Saturday night. The Dallas Stars visiting in the Blackhawks home opener on Saturday night at the United Center. And joining us tonight to talk about that is a very special man, a writer extraordinaire, if you will. He is the editor of The Committed Indian, SecondCityHockey.com, and, of course, NBC Chicago's Madhouse Enforcer blog, which you can find at NBCChicago.com/blog/Madhouse-Enforcer. I say that because no one ever says that, but that's where you can find him. Sam Fells, how you doing tonight, Sam?
It's good to be here, Chris. I'm all right. I also want to add guy to my title, like you've got on yours, editor, writer, and guy. I like that. I think I'm going to go with that from now on.
So we got a lot of stuff to talk about, of course.
Sure do.
We usually visit you at the beginning of every season to kind of get your temperature on all things Blackhawks and then, of course, the league in general. But, Sam, I want to start off. The Blackhawks have injuries. They have issues. They have guys that are a little woozy, a little mystery injuries in camp, as always. Dave Bolin comes to mind. But how do you feel, Sam, opening night of the possibility of having John Scott on the left wing?
I think we know how I feel about that. I spent a good portion of my season last season bemoaning that. And I hope that's not the case. They certainly have enough bodies to not have that happen. And who are we trying to protect against? These opening two games, Adam Parrish? What would be the point? I thought the whole point of the offseason was to keep him off our forward core, off the ice, pretty much. I would think Jamal Mayers and Rustiola should be fine fourth line wingers, but what do I know? I'm just a guy out here in the cold.
You are a guy. Well, let's get into the depth chart here for everybody since I mentioned it. There are injuries in camp. Ben Smith, of course, has the concussion, the hit last week from Brendan Smith. We can talk about that in a little while if you want. And then Dave Bolin, he's got the classic upper body injury. Don't really know what it is, but he's got it. Ben Smith, Joe Quenneville today said on Ben Smith, he said he's really progressed well in the past few days, and Ben Smith could be cleared for contact on Wednesday, which probably means you'll see Ben Smith either Friday or Saturday. But he's up in the air right now, but he's a guy that's not going to the injured list. Patrick Sharp is playing on Friday, of course, according to Joe Quenneville today. But on Dave Bolin, he said, Quenneville said there's a chance Dave Bolin could get on the ice on Wednesday, and he also said there's a chance he could play Friday or Saturday. But that's very, it's up in the air at this point. So neither of those guys are going on the injured list. Daniel Carcillo is suspended. There's not a lot of roster spots to move around, you know, to bring up a guy from Rockford. So that's why I bring that up. There's a possibility. Brandon Saad, of course, signed to his 3-year entry-level deal today officially. So he's going to start the season at least with the Blackhawks on the top line. Jonathan Toews, Patrick Sharp, and Brandon Saad. It looks like the second line is going to be Patrick Kane at center. We'll talk about that later. Marion Hossa and Andrew Burnett. And then the third and fourth line are kind of up for grabs. There's no center on that Fickell, Frolik, and Bolin line right now with Bolin up in the air. And then the fourth line, it's definitely going to be Rusty Olish and Jamal Mayers in some form or fashion, but then they need a center. So, or Mayers moves over to center and John Scott, or if they can somehow finagle a guy up for Rockford, that would happen. But that's why I bring that up. Of course, the defense, right. Joe Quenneville today, I guess, said that we're starting off with Duncan, Keith, and Nick Leddy as a pairing,
yeah.
Jalmerson mm-hmm. and Brent Seabrook, Steve Monador, and then whoever you want, Sammy Lopesto or Sean O'Donnell, but for certain not John Scott.
Right.
Your thoughts on all that?
All three and go with 7D, I suppose. I don't want to get too worked up about the opening two games of the year. It's such a long season. I talked about this on NBC. I find it just odd that, you know, after a summer of a few stories of talking about what great shape Dave Boland is and how hard he's been working, we're right back where we started with him pretty much every year. You know, he's hard. We don't know what it is. Don't know how much he's going to play. We don't know if it's going to linger. And I wonder if they're not being a little more forthright just because they spent all summer telling us, well, how this year would be different and how he's taking his physical condition more seriously this time. I don't think there's anything too serious here, you know. You know, Ben Smith, you always worry about concussions. You always worry about the Hawks' handling of concussions. If Ben Smith matters that much, then maybe you're just not as good as you think you are. But, I think all the important guys there seem healthy and ready to go. So, you know, it's a numbers game. It's a tough little Tetris puzzle to put together. But, you know, what are we talking about here? We're talking about two games, and then Carcillo's off the suspended list, and all this starts to make sense. And your worst-case scenario is, you know, Jamal Mayers is to play center for a little while. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they do, you know. Maybe they have to put Ball on an injury list and call Peary back up if they think it'll take longer. But, it's not – worry wouldn't be the right word, but it's something to keep an eye on, I guess.
We should also mention in the news today, Stan Bowman got a contract extension, a 3-year deal. He was – the interesting thing about this one is he's got a 3-year contract extension that doesn't kick in for another two seasons.
Right.
So,
he
was good for the next 2 years, and he got another 3 years. And so we got that done. And then, of course, Ray Emery, is no surprise to a lot of people, myself included. Ray Emery gets a 1-year deal. It's guaranteed. It's a one-way deal for $600,000. 29-year-old Ray Emery coming off that hip surgery. Last year he was on a two-way with Anaheim. So he's got guaranteed money this year. He starts with the Blackhawks. Are you surprised at all about Ray Emery?
No, I think that was pretty much the point. As soon as he was signed to a tryout, I saw this, you know, shaking out. It may be a bit just because of the discrepancy of his and Salak's play in the preseason, but this is how the Hawks tend to work it. They like to keep, if maybe not their other players, but they like to seem to overcook their goalies. You know, Niemi spent a year in Rockford splitting with Crawford. They kept Crawford down there forever, and you know, I don't know, despite how good he looked, was anyone really comfortable, you know, with the Hawks being just one play away from having to trust, you know, a guy who's got, what, one NHL game and one season in the AHL to his resume? I don't think it, you know, Emery, he might not have been a very impressive in camp, but, you know, he's got a long enough pro career that you kind of know what you're getting. You know, he's not that bad. He's not what we saw in the preseason, and he's probably not as good as we saw with the Ducks in the regular season, but what are you asking here? You're asking maybe a start every 2 weeks behind a much better defense than he had in Anaheim, and I hardly think he's going to get you killed. You know, it's a player who really shouldn't matter all that much. I mean, he's definitely going to come in and give you a chance to win, but I don't see any reason he can't do that, and it just makes more sense to go this way. And if he is terrible, well, at least you're getting select games down in Rockford. And if he does need to be called up, at least he's fresh and ready to go. You know, he's not just sitting on a bench, which he's never done either. So not a surprise, and probably the way it was always going to work out.
Right, and even more so, the reason why it's a smart move is you know, I mean, Corey Crawford's not, he's 26 years old, but it is his sophomore season.
Right.
And he is the guy this year, which he coming in last year he wasn't. So it's the brain game of the NHL, let's call it, it's a different game for him this year. So I expect Corey Crawford to be fine, but I mean, there's nothing that tells me that. I don't have any, you know, anything to really go off of aside from a hunch. So if he does have a bad start off to the season, a bad October, or if he were to get hurt and you have to have a goaltender in there for a patch of games, not just one or two every 3 weeks, you're talking about a patch of games, I'd feel more comfortable at this stage with Ray Emery than I would Alexander Salak. So I think it's a good move. And as you said, if Emery's bad, you bring Salak up and he has work and he can come up and hopefully bridge a gap there and whatever. But I think it's a smart move. No, he didn't have a good preseason, so, you know, it kind of looks funky, but I think it was a smart move, and it's a move that I expected all along.
I'm always uncomfortable judging players or goalies of preseason games. You know, lineups are funky. They're just funky occasions. Some guys are just working on things. Some guys are just trying not to get hurt. And I'm not trying to make excuses for Emery here. He had some goals there that were definitely, you know, would make me itchy if I were really counting on him. But I think Emery behind at least just a solid defense, and the Hawks defense has a chance to be more than that. I don't think he's going to hurt you at all. And he might even be good. You know, if you get the Emery play for the Ducks last year, you're doing pretty well for backup goalie.
You know, I'm looking at my notes here. I prepared for the show this week, Sam.
I'm flattered.
I prepared for the show. I'm looking at my notes. I want to make this point before anybody tunes this out. Second City Hockey this Friday is having their Chicago Blackhawks season opener viewing party at the Bottom Lounge at Lake Street in Ogden, 1374 West Lake. Right, the pink or the green line. If you take, what the PTA
right there
is, and you can, it's right there, the pink and the green at Lake and Ogden, the Bottom Lounge. What's going to be happening there on Friday night, Sam?
Well, it'll just be our normal viewing party, nothing too special. You get off work, come down, have a few beers with us, watch the game. We might have a few thing promotions going on, hopefully, but won't be the full bore viewing party that we'll get working later in the year, but. You know, we thought first game of the year. It's been so long. We should try and, get together with our group of readers we can find and be one big happy family at least for one night. You know the drill on these, Chris. So
I may even stop by.
Well, we'd be honored to have you.
Once everybody leaves.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
If I recall your quote at Prospect Camp, where Fox fans creep me out. And that's why you wouldn't venture upstairs, if I recall.
You know what? I was doing some show prep. You know what doesn't creep me out, Sam?
Hmm.
The Dallas Stars Ice Girls. I was.
No,
that's
a high level of talent right there.
Yes, I was doing some of my reconnaissance here on for the show tonight, and
look
I went over
the length you go to for your listeners. It's really impressive.
Yes. If you go up to stars.nhl.com right now and you click over those Stars Ice Girls, they've got some behind-the-scenes auditions, part one and two. It's quality stuff.
And if you're a Stars fan, that might be all you have to watch this season. So might want to take that in.
They've got the Dowell-Bickle connection back together.
I apologize. And the Badgers have gone south, and they'll leave the Stars to playoff glory, I'm sure.
Actually, I still have photos. I better get rid of these so we can concentrate. I got some Dallas Stars girls up here already.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to leave any incriminating evidence.
I like the one on the left, the right, and the middle.
Okay.
All right. Brandon Saad. What did you think of him in the preseason, Sam?
I mean, I was impressed. I liked him at prospect camp when I went down there. I didn't catch much of the rookie tournament from what I did. He was all right. You know, I think the Hawks would like us all to believe that he was, you know, just bowled everyone over and was head and shoulders above everyone else. I don't know if I buy that, but he was good. There's no question. I don't know if he was any better than Brandon Peary, but Hawks have a need of a wing and not center, I guess. So that's fine. I mean, you know, I'm not going to get too up in arms. There's no way he's going to play more than the 9 games. I'd be surprised if he plays more than these 2 games, actually, before they send him back to his junior team. But, you know, giving him a brief taste, seeing how far away he is from actually being a contributing NHL player, you know, for 2-3 games here. I don't really see how it can hurt unless he gets hurt, but he could get hurt as a junior as well. So, you know, you always take that risk. I like the pick when they made it. You know, everyone said he was the first round pick and they got him in the second round. So it's a good story, no question. You know, it's always a good story when some 18-year-old kid makes a team out of camp. But, you know, he's not going to redefine the position for the Hawks, you know, or anything like that. But, you know, he can skate up. He can skate with Taze. I don't think he's gonna get anyone killed out there. And maybe he'll be productive. Maybe he'll chip in a goal or something. But, you know, we're talking about, what, 2-3 games at most? You know, unless he really – really does something special, but I don't think he's Jeff Skinner or anything like that, so at least not yet. So we'll just have to wait and see.
I like Saad a lot. I mean, 43rd overall in the second round. You know, I hear a lot of people talking about it. What great of a pick. I mean, like you said, it is a great pick that you can get a guy of that caliber at 43. But when you start talking about it, it's a steal. Oh, the Blackhawks got a steal. I mean, you got to remember the Hawks passed on him 3 times too.
Right.
So
exactly. So.
You know, are they that brilliant that the Blackhawks are a team that let them slip to 43 too. So they're rather fortunate that they were able to get him there and that it's panned out at least at this point. He hasn't played a game, but I like Saad a lot. He reminds me of a young, quicker Steve Larmer. He's very heady with the puck. He'll drive to the net with the puck. He just looks like a smart player who you can trust. I'm with you, though. I don't think he's going to – I don't know that it's going to be more – I think it'll be more than 2 games. I don't think it'll be more than 9 unless there's some, you know, injury down the road in the first 9 games that warrants it or puts them in a position where it's like, okay, what do these guys in Rockford look like? You know, is this the best move? I want to ask you this question personally, I would like to see him – go to Rockford because I'm watching his game and training, you know, in the prospect camp, the prospect tournament, and in the preseason. I don't know what's to gain from sending him back to Saginaw other than just asking him to be the best player in Saginaw. But, I mean, does he get any better just being the best player against other junior players? It's clear that he can at least compete at a level with some NHL players. You know, we'll see once they turn the bright lights on. But I guess I'd ask you, looking back at Jeremy Morin last year, I mean, what was your temperature like? I mean, compare and contrast there what you were expecting more from Morin and how you're looking at Saad now. Is there any difference?
Well, I guess I'm trying. Well, I won't say learn a lesson. That's harsh. You know, it seemed like it was the same level of hype or, as we like to call it, propaganda about Morin last training camp. And I liked what I saw of him, and I liked what I saw of Morin in the regular season games that he played. You know, it wasn't like he was the best player on the ice or, you know, a true force, but you could see where he was doing mostly good things, and you could see where one day down the road, maybe a year or two, you know, he could be a very effective player. And I guess I feel the same way about Brandon Saad. Honestly, I actually hadn't even thought about sending him to Rockford, but he is U.S. born. You can't do that if you wanted to. I guess the reason they wouldn't is because Rockford's top 6. At least the moment would seem relatively, you know, stocked up, or maybe they just don't think he'd automatically get the minutes that they want him to develop. Whereas, you know, Saginaw, he's obviously playing top line minutes all the time.
Well, they need scoring in Rockford. That's the other thing.
Yeah, that's true. But you know, I mean, Hayes is down there. I don't know if they've completely given up on Beach. Maybe they have, but you know, Peary and Kruger are your centers. Maybe they just didn't feel he would automatically get the minutes they would like, but. I don't know where his development. Maybe they're just gun shy from sending kids to Rockford. So really, with Morin, and it took Peary so long to warm up for the pro game. So, you know, I couldn't tell you why they didn't decide to do that, but maybe they will. I don't know.
You brought up Peary. Let's talk about him for a second. Put up some numbers in training camp, and you know we still have a few days if they can sort of finagle the roster. If they need a center, they could bring him up. But are you shocked at all that they sent him down after the training camp that he had?
I was a little surprised. I didn't think they would keep Saad on the roster. I have to admit, a nice camp and all. I thought Ben Smith was going to be out a lot longer, and we don't know that he shouldn't be out a lot longer. This is the Hawks' true medical staff we're talking about, but. And I thought Peary could fill in on a fourth line center for a little while when you need him to, or at least for two games. You know, certainly better than Marcus Kruger could. But, you know, at least the Hawks aren't being distracted by goals scored in the preseason. You know, that can always be a kind of an outlier. But I thought Peary's overall game was actually pretty good during the preseason. You know, he was killing some penalties. He looked all right in his own zone. So I was a little surprised that he didn't break camp with the team. I'm not shocked. And, you know, I said this on the blogs. You know, we're talking about a player who's only got an effective quarter of a season at the AHL level. You know, and that's probably not enough. And a training camp is not enough to decide if this kid's ready to contribute at the AHL level. So they felt, no, he needs to go down to the AHL, be the top line center down there, and maybe not dominate, but it'll certainly be very, very good. But that's not surprising, and probably makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, if you're aiming, and this has been the plan all along, if you're aiming Brandon Peary for that second line center position, you know, ultimately, I mean, maybe not right away. Let's just say if, you know, this time next year, maybe not right away, but that's always been the plan. That second line scoring center behind Taves. If that's what your aim is to do, you want Brandon Peary to go back, be the top line center. It's not play in all situations, play some PK. Obviously, I mean, he's been on the power play since he's got there, playing the half wall on the first unit primarily all year last year. But if that's your aim is to have him be that second line center, which means he's either skating with if Hossa's still here next year, if you have Kane, whoever's on those lines, he's going to be playing with great players. It would be good to have him in Rockford playing in key situations with the pressure on him. And that's the thing about Rockford last year. It's a fresh season, but last year he wasn't – when his game turned around, Rockford's season was over. So
right.
He was playing and he was performing in non-pressure situations. Let's see how he performs in pressure situations. And I think that's the thing that I want to see. I like Brandon Peary at the end of last season. There's some good things I saw in camp. I wasn't too impressed with his scoring. Low zone defensive coverage in this preseason, around every game that I saw, I'm not even talking about the Blackhawks particularly, although theirs was bad, low zone D coverage was awful. And
right.
I think two or three of those goals that Peary scored in the preseason, he doesn't get in the regular season. So I don't know. I think it's the best move. If he has to come up for a game or two, that's fine. But, you know, it's encouraging what we've seen.
That's the conclusion I have, John, is that, you know, he needs to go down to Rockford and play with the Mets, but if there's some injuries down the middle, you know, say you have a couple games stretch where Boland and Sharp or Kane or whoever they're calling a center that week, you know, are hurt, and he can come up for a game or two and certainly fill in and maybe do a couple things for you. He's at that point right now, but I never thought he was ready to come up, be a full-time part of the team and contribute it that way. Maybe he is in a year. We'll see. They have a few centers in the system who they claim will be that, so we'll just have to wait and see how that works out. But he had a good camp, and you know, it's good to see at least he's progressing. You know, because we all saw last year and read the reports from Rockford or wherever it was, where, you know, he was just having his head handed to him on a nightly basis, and it's good to see him sort of learn from that, get through it, and at least become someone we can think about, you know, in the future.
The biggest story, I think, of camp by far is this, what apparently, at least this week, is not an experiment. Joe Quenneville has come out and said that, no, Patrick Sharp is moving to the wing, and that's where he's staying, that he's going to be permanently on the wing, at least of this week. That's what Joe Quenneville says.
Right.
And Patrick Kane is your second-line center, position that he's played a little bit before, but he's one of the best right wings in hockey. Now he's going to move to the center. I guess I want to get your thoughts on it, but also, how long are either of these moves going to last, Sam?
Boy, I don't know. Yeah, this just feels like Bobby Ryan at center, doesn't it? It's something that, like, I guess in a vacuum makes some sense. You know, when Savard first tried this, and I wasn't, you know, I wasn't an official Hawks fan writer yet, you know, and the message boards were just up in arms about it. I guess I saw what they saw. You know, you've got the vision and the hands and all that, but I didn't think it worked. I think a good litmus test it will be when the Bruins come in the fourth game of the year. Because, I mean, let's face it, the Stars kind of blow. I shouldn't even say kind of. I think they're going to be really bad. But, you know, so he's going to, no matter what position he plays against them, he's going to look pretty good. It's the Jets after that, and displaying all the energy and the former Hawks and all that, and the story about them moving. They're not a very good hockey team either. So even if he's not the perfect center, he's going to have good games against those teams. But, you know, the fourth game when the Bruins are here and they roll a real roster of centers at you with Krejci or Bergeron or Peverly or whoever's playing third line center for them, they have a few options. I think we'll get a pretty good idea of how this is going to work. I think it'll probably last most of the first month, and then we'll see. You know, something that I hadn't really thought about when I was making fun of this is, at least offensively, I don't know that it matters as much what position you're playing. The Hawks are more based on who's first in the zone, who has the puck, and if he and Host are getting a cycle going, does it really matter who's the center and who's not? I don't know that it does. We'll see how he does defensively. If he's interested defensively, I'm not going to ever argue he's going to be a selkie winner, but like he can at least be, I don't know, even with what he creates on the other end, maybe just behind. You know, it's last year where he was not even interested that he was killing the Hawks in their own zone, and maybe they think by putting him at center, he won't even have the option of not caring. Maybe, I don't know. I'm not in the book. I'd love to be a fly on the wall in some of these meetings just to see how these conclusions get reached. But as far as Sharp goes, I don't get it. Maybe they were so scared off by just how badly he started the year defensively at center last year, and they just don't even want to risk it again. But, you know, they keep telling, like, I don't understand. They keep telling me, oh, he's a natural winger, he's a natural winger. From what I can tell, he played wing for 1 year, which was Taves and Kane's rookie year, and every other season he's mostly been a center. He was a center when they won the Cup. He was a very good center, and for some reason they want me to believe that he was just playing out of position and he's that good. I don't know if I buy that, but you know, the one thing the Hawks are going to catch here is that opening month schedule is pretty weak. And if they want to try some things and still get away with a decent amount of points, I mean, this is the time to do it.
Yeah, I think for me, looking at it, it's moving Sharp over and just even to risk playing Kane. Because no matter, we say it many times, and I say it many times, no matter what line Kane plays on, he's the puck distributor. So
right.
Moving him to center ice doesn't give him the puck. He already has the puck. He's just with the puck in a different situation, a different position. I think it's kind of the absence of, you know, we say it many times. I mean, even though Kane's going to start with Hossa and Brunette, it looks like, it makes more sense to have Kane with Sharp. But it seems like there's that absence of that lockdown left wing.
Right.
Like Andrew Ladd would represent if he were still here, you know, and which is that if you were to put those two together, that's what you would need. But yeah, like you said, when Sharp came over from the Flyers, he was a third and fourth line center on the Blackhawks. It was getting ice time here that he just wasn't going to get in Philly, and he blossomed into what he is now. But you know, that position that he likes to float to in the left circle, and he scores a lot of his goals from, he gets. And then he gets down low in the back door, he could still do that as a center because if he's on Kane's line, Kane's going to have that puck on the right wall,
right.
And he can get open. It's just, to me, it's just about, it's a question defensively of what does Joe Quenneville want from his center. And if he's going to make special rules for each line, which some coaches do,
right.
Then it might work. But if he's going to ask Patrick Kane to play goal line to goal line, then I think it's not going to last very long. And that's not a slight on Kane because he's a great player, but he's
not what he does.
Minded player.
There are two things for me. Is Sharp on a wing, you know, is that as effective when Kane's not on that same line? You know, is Sharp going to score at that rate playing with Taves and fill in the blank, whoever that shakes out to be, whether it's, you know, I couldn't even begin to guess who it might, you know, is it Stahlberg or Saad the Start or whoever, you know, does it make sense to turn Taze into a distributor, which he's not bad at it, but that's not his entire game. And is Sharp, you know, Sharp's a finisher. That's what he is, whatever position he's playing. Is he going to score that much with, you know, not with Kane on his line? So, you know, I don't, you know, Kane goal line to goal line, yeah, I don't know, but I don't think it would work either, but you know the thing. Here's the thing about Kane: he's when he wants to be. At least 2 years ago, he's stronger than I think people give him credit for. Maybe it's just the low center of gravity, but when he wants to be. You know, he can be really hard to deal with along the wall. But I don't want to, you know, that's offensively. Battling defensively behind the goal with these centers who are just going to be bigger than him. You know, what's he going to do with Ryan Getzlaff if that ever comes to fruition? Like, I have no idea, you know. So we'll just have to see. But as I said, like, the Hawks have some games to play with here because I believe, and I'm not looking at the schedule right now, but that first month, the only team you consider upper echelon is the Bruins. And after that, there's not much there. And if you want to say, well, look, we can try this and we'll probably still win because we're just better than this team, maybe it's not the worst idea in the world.
You're not excited about Eric Fair and Patrice Cormier and Burmistrov coming in on next Thursday night?
Well, I can't say that out loud. You know, I may be, but I will never admit to it.
And they signed the 18-year-old kid, the 7th overall, Mark Scheifele. That's how you
Scheifele.
Pronounce that name, Mark Scheifele. They signed him today, so.
Yeah, that's the one I can't get my tongue around. I know they were high on him. I know the guy, Howard Schuck, who says the Jets blog on our network, didn't think he should be up in the NHL this year, but he's wowed everyone up there, so I guess we'll have to take a look for ourselves.
Well, you know, let's backtrack because, you know, we've touched base over the course of the summer, but I guess Stan Bowman's off season. What stands out to you? Obviously, we could start with Brian Campbell, but what stands out to you? Your likes and your dislikes of, you know, the roster shuffling over the summer.
You know, I mean, I really like it. It'd be stupid to say you have to like the flexibility he's given this team, not just this year, but for a couple of years here. You know, I mean, they have some cap space. They have some prospects for, you know, that if they need to move this year or the next year, that they can do it, which they haven't had in, you know, a couple of years here. Now, I may not like what losing Brian Campbell on the ice is going to do, but I can't sit here and tell you that losing that contract is not, you know, really do something for you. You know, I thought maybe you could have done it a year later than you did, but they did it now. I've sort of gotten over my blind rage of it, but, you know, you have to like the cap flexibility they have now. With whatever system comes in next year, because they have a lot of guys signed next year, but they also have a lot of space. So, you know, I think that's the most important thing, and the thing that I like most, you know, and all the guys who are going to make this team matter are here, and you can just change the parts around it, or you can open up spaces for kids coming through. You know, if it works out that Jimmy Hayes actually turns into a thing, well, Andrew Burnett's only here for 1 year. And, you know, he can just slot right in and stuff like that. So I like that. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, I like the way he improved the defense. I don't know that it's going to be as good as we saw 2 years ago, but it's still going to be pretty good, even if Nick Leddy isn't what they keep telling me he is. I think it's pretty solid, 1-6. There's definitely a third pairing you can roll out there that can take 15 to 18 minutes and not only not get you killed, but maybe actually do some things. So you have to like that. You know, I don't know if I buy into the whole sandpaper be harder to play against thing, but I don't know that they went so hog wild into that it's gonna detract from the team. You know, these are the first questions they asked Steve Montador and Andrew Burnett at their press conference. They just thought it was so stupid. But, you know, these guys are not brought here because they fight. They're brought here because they do things on the ice. Now, Carcillo and Myers, yeah, but those are fourth-line guys who can actually take a shift, which I think is what he was really getting at, but not what he's going to tell the press. He just wanted guys on the fourth line who can come out, create a little energy, obviously, yeah, hit some people, but, you know, can also play the game. I think the Hawks are built on having a fourth line that can do that. And despite all the crap that Carcillo will start and the debates he'll generate, he's got some hands and he can play the game a bit, and I think that's more important than the shenanigans he'll get up to, you know, at some point.
I don't think Carcillo can play a lick, but that's just
based on
how he played last year. But I will say, Jamal Mayers has been very good in the preseason.
Yes.
I don't know how that's going to last. I mean, 37-year-old
right.
guy, I don't know how long that's going to last. But and he played a lot in the preseason, which stuck
right.
out to me. But
no, there's probably an angle here of giving Quinville his guys, you know, like, hockey's not the only sport we do that, but, You know, Brunette's is a Quinville guy. Mayers is a Quinville guy. And maybe there's just this thing, well, he will function under my system or my coaching, you know. And maybe because I remember seeing Mayers with the Sharks last year or the Flames and the Leafs before that. I don't remember a standout fourth-line guy. I just remember a guy. But maybe a guy is better than some of the bums you were tossing out there last year. You know, it probably is.
The thing with Jamal Mayers is, and I don't think this is going to be the way it happens over the long haul. You could put Ben Smith at the center position on the fourth line, but I don't want to see Jamal Mayers at center for any long stretch of time. It's just too much ice for him to cover. He's not a center. He can take. I think people have seen Jamal Mayers play hockey and they've seen him take draws, but
and they assume he's a center.
Yeah, he's not a center. So, I mean. Well, we talked about it. I forget who was on the show. Maybe it was John of the Fifth Feather. We talked about it over the summer. If at the time when we were assuming that Marcus Kruger would be on that line, Marcus Kruger, where have you gone? But we assumed that it would be Kruger. We kind of said, well, okay, if he's on that line, until he can start winning draws with any sort of regularity, because the last thing you need for your fourth line is for your fourth line to not at least be even on draws. I mean, you want your fourth line to gain possession so they can do something. Otherwise, you can't play your fourth line. But if Mayers has to go over there and take a draw, that's fine. But he's got to immediately switch and get back to his natural position. If the Hawks are that weak at center that you have to put Kane at center for what you know, if that's the case, I think the Hawks are in trouble on that fourth line, and I don't think that fourth line plays a lot.
Well, I think the plan is to put Ben Smith there. I mean, that's where he was playing the night he got hurt. I thought that looked like their test run for you know the regular season. I think he would have played there against the Penguins the second to last game. So I'm pretty sure that's the plan. I'm pretty sure Jamal Mayers will still be taking the draws, but I think he'll be on a wing with Ben Smith and whatever Olesh / Carcillo, whoever on the fourth line. I don't think we have to worry about Jammer trying to cover the center of the ice. I hope not.
Yeah, I mean Smith can play any position you want him to play, and he's a smart player. I don't know about. I mean, it's for a fourth line. It's fine, but I like Smith better on the wall, but that's neither here nor there. Not a big deal. Why don't we switch to the defense, because the defense has changed. The makeup of the defense, especially from position, whether you want to call it a three or a four, through eight now, because the Hawks are carrying eight defensemen. Obviously, Campbell out. Nick Leddy moves into his position. Ultimately, he's going to start with Duncan Keith, where he was last season. Say what you will about that, but that's where he is.
And I will.
What do you like about the changes, and what is a concern on the defense going into the season for you?
I like the depth of it. I think you have to. They don't no longer have a third pair that they just can't trust with any minutes. You know, however the third pairing shakes out, if it's Montador and O'Donnell, which I think is what they'll start with, or even Montador and Lepisto or whatever. I mean, those are guys who can take 15 to 18 minutes, despite every reader on my blog already hating Steve Montador for reasons I haven't been able to discern yet. I like him, and I think the depth of it is a good thing, because if nothing else, it saves Keith and Seabrook's minutes until you need them. We don't need them. There's no way they should be skating half an hour in October and November, and at least with this lineup, they shouldn't have to. There's a little more size back there than there was, which I like. I think O'Donnell, yeah, he can't move. I don't know if he's got any hands whatsoever, but, you know, he's a veteran. He's been there, done that, as the cliche goes, and he'll at least make life hard, down low and then in the crease. So, I mean, that's the biggest improvement. That's what I like most, that they'll be able to roll three pairs here and not have to worry about getting their heads caved in when the third pairing comes in, you know. The rest of it depends on players returning to form, which you won't know until the season starts.
Yeah, I mean, Duncan Keith, for the record, I should mention, last night, all a new record for the thirdmanin.com. I want to thank, we have 26 teams spread across three leagues in our fantasy hockey poolies.
Wow,
and we had all three drafts last night. I want to thank everybody that participated. And I do want to point this out. I did draft Duncan Keith in two of my leagues. So I'm a Duncan Keith backer.
I know,
one
you
of those
do have a rep for being kind of a basher, don't you? But I don't think that's the case.
Not at all. If he plays bad, of course I'm going to say he plays bad, but he better not play bad because now I got something on it.
Just more than emotion now.
Let's talk about Chris Campoli.
Okay.
Chris Campoli, it was a little bit of an issue this summer. I think a lot of fans were appalled when Chris Campoli asked for a reported $3 million in his negotiations with the Blackhawks back when he was a restricted free agent.
Right.
Just signed with the Montreal Canadiens, a one-year deal. He got 1.75, and I don't even know. I don't think anybody knows. Maybe Sam, you've heard something. I don't even know if the Blackhawks were offering 1.75.
I read something where they offered him slightly less than that. I don't know. I haven't seen much about what the Hawks were offering, but it certainly wasn't three. I think it was that 1.75 number sounds probably just about right. I bet if Campoli had offered them that, in June, they probably would have signed him for that. But
I want to say this because Campoli's being bashed all over the place, and that's fine. And you know, Sam, you know this. People that listen to this regularly know I was no Chris Campoli fan. But
right.
when other defensemen of his ilk, maybe not attributes, but guys in his defense. The range of what he is as an NHL defenseman and what he can bring to your club, when other guys of his ilk are getting $2.7 million cap hits, Steve Monitor,
mm-hmm.
Andre Sakara in Buffalo, when those guys are getting that, of course Chris Campoli should shoot for that. He shouldn't devalue himself. And, you know, the thing about it is this, okay, when I've said this, when the Blackhawks signed Monitor, Campoli was – I mean, he wasn't necessarily gone, but his place on the team was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Blackhawks weren't going to sign him for three. They might even not sign him for 1.75 because, like you mentioned, they wanted to be more flexible. They wanted more depth. Is Chris Campoli a better defenseman than Sean O'Donnell or Samuel Lefisto? Of course he is. I guess people would debate Lefisto, but I think he's better than Lefisto. But the Blackhawks wanted more flexibility. They wanted, and if Campoli would have said, okay, 1.5, I'll take it, well, the Blackhawks still signed Sean O'Donnell. Campoli is a bad game away from being in the press box.
Yes.
Whereas now he waited, and now he's going to the Montreal Canadiens. You got Andre Markov. It's got that bad knee. He's going to play. He's going to be a fixture on that team, and he's in a contract year. Next summer he's going to be UFA. If he were to stay in Chicago, no matter what he was going to get from the Hawks, he probably wasn't going to get the minutes, nor was he going to bring the numbers to unrestricted free agency that he's going to have the opportunity now in Montreal to attain. And
right.
I think, did he shoot for three and not get it? Yeah, but he was a restricted free agent. He was at the mercy of the Blackhawks. I think he and his agent did an excellent job of – he still got a raise. I think it's $350,000 more than he was making last year. He still gets a raise. He's in an excellent spot to go and earn it himself. I think they did an excellent job. And, I'm not crying tears for Chris Campoli, you know, that he's gone. I don't care one way or another. But I think they did a great job. And, you know, people that think otherwise, I think, are I'll just go and say it, a little ignorant.
That's right. I think it was – you could argue it's well handled on both sides, you know. The Hawks didn't, you know, act desperate to keep him knowing there were other options out there. And the drop-off from the role they would have had Campoli play, the drop-off from Campoli to Lefisto is probably not that steep. The only reason I like Campoli and wanted to stay is that, you know, he can play the type of game they're going to ask Nick Leddy to that we still don't know if he's actually ready to do. And you could have lessened Leddy's minutes at the beginning of the season, sort of let him work into it. Now, if, you know, Leddy's going to start in the second pair and he's got to produce right away, because if he doesn't, I don't know what the next solution. I don't think Sammy Lapinto is ready to take second pairing minutes for any stretch of time. But you know, the Hawks are not going to not win the Cup because Chris Campbell is here or he's not. You know, I don't want to say it's a periphery matter, but it's not. You know, that's not the make or break decision of the summer, I don't think.
Right. Okay, Sam, let's talk about going into the season. You're looking at the team right now. What are, you know, three of your big, your key storylines or the, you know, sprinkle in a player or two there that you're looking at that are going to be the key or defining guys that determine whether or not key storylines or players are going to define whether or not the Blackhawks get back to their goal, which is to reach another Stanley Cup final?
Well, I don't know if it counts as one or two storylines, but the two guys in the second pairing for me are the first thing I'm looking for on Friday night, and that's Hjalmarsson and Letty. Or I guess they're not playing together, but I think eventually that's probably how it shakes out. You know, they've got a lot invested in these two. They're pretty much handing the backup car keys to Letty if Duncan Keith has the keys of a main car. And they're not going to ask him to be Brian Campbell, but they're going to ask him to pretty much do those things. You know, have 20 minutes a night of a player out there who can push the pace, get you from one end of the ice to the other. He's going to be running the second power play unit. You're going to need that at some point. They have they're asking an awful lot of these kids. They believe in him a lot, but on evidence that, you know, I've seen a flash here and there, a game here and there, and I thought he was very good at the very end of that Vancouver series. But, you know, we're talking about sample sizes here, and we don't have enough of it to say, well, he can definitely do it. You know, we have to just see if he can. And then if he can't, you don't really have a lot of solutions. You know, Steven Matador is not that type of player. I don't think Sammy Lapinto is. If he is, he's a third pairing guy. You're going to have to, that might be something you have to go out and solve outside the organization. And I don't know if you want to do that because those players are hard to find, and if you find them, they're awfully expensive to acquire. So that's the first thing I'm looking at. And then, you know, beyond that, it seems like this is the third year in a row you and I are talking about this, but it's Dave Bolin's health. A lot of what the Hawks want to do is based on having Bolin in the lineup. Again, he's an integral part of the second power play unit. You know, we think he and Frolik and Bickler are going to make a pretty impressive line. We don't know that. We only have four games of evidence of that. So, you know, these are the first two things that pop into my head. If Bolin's in the lineup, you know, especially with at least this Kane and Hossa thing together, I think you have three really solid lines who can all hurt you and can all, you know, play in their own end. If you don't, things look a little different. I don't expect Bolin to be out a long time. I don't think this is a serious injury, but no one knows. So who's to say? So I think those are the first two things that that come up. Because I thought if Bolin was healthy this year, he was going to have, I don't know if you call it a breakout year, but he would set a career high in points and goals and really sort of flourish on both ends of the ice. Now I'm not so sure, but we'll see how he looks at whenever he comes back from whatever this injury is.
Well, of course, because he'd be passing the puck to Brian Bickle. He's got that
right,
awesome shot.
Exactly.
I love that when Bickle shows up at wherever at training camp or whenever the media caught up with him and he's talking about, yeah, I almost got the strength back in my wrist. I got it back in my shot. It's like you want to hit him in the head with a shovel.
Yeah, basically you do because I don't care about your shot. I really don't, you know.
I'm on board with you. I've talked about it a couple of weeks ago. You know, Hjalmarsson for me is key. You know, I've got patience for Nick Leddy. I like Nick Leddy. I think it's if he would have stayed in Rockford and he would have played in all these situations and then been like the late season call up last year, I'd feel better about Nick Leddy right now. I like Nick Leddy long term, but I have patience for him. It's not his fault.
Right.
I like him long term, but it's Hjalmarsson's the guy for me. I need Hjalmarsson to take a step or two up. And the other thing is, he's got to become a better shot blocker. You know, everybody talks about all these shots he blocks. He gets hurt when he blocks shots, and that's a sign of a guy who's not good at the art.
Right.
So I need him to become a better shot blocker. And the one thing that you didn't mention that I think is absolutely key, and, you know, I mean, Sharp, he's not going to miss any time. He's in the lineup opening night. Kane got back in the lineup opening night. But the Blackhawks are going to have injuries over the course of the season. I look at the Pittsburgh Penguins last year, and I look at the Blackhawks now. I look down at Rockford. I think it's absolutely key. If the Blackhawks, it doesn't matter in the playoffs. You know, the Blackhawks aren't going to win a playoff series or a Western Conference or a Stanley Cup based on what the guys that come up from Rockford do. But it could very well be determined where they finish in the West, you know, and avoiding a first-round series against Vancouver, if they're good again, which I don't think they will be. I think Vancouver's in a lot of trouble.
Well, you didn't think Vancouver was going to be good last year, so...
Yeah, so you really shouldn't listen to me. No, actually, no. We'll talk about that in a bit.
You thought they would be good, but I guess in eventually
not until after they fired Elaine Vigneault, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is basically...
Yeah.
I should just put the rest of the show... We should just play the rest of the show and go to the bar, Sam.
But... You weren't ultimately wrong. You had questions about their defense, and the Bruins did sort of ragdoll them all around. Now, it did take until the last game, very possible last game, but, you know, eventually you were proven right. But I see what you're saying about, you know, the Hawks are going to have guys come up from Rockford and be able to fill in for 5-10 games.
Which they didn't have last year, which is another thing about that those fourth line guys that are able to come up and play a shift. It's like with Jeff Tate last year. Jeff Tate was dynamite in the second half in Rockford, but when he came up, he just didn't have a place on the team, where he could fit in and contribute because he's not an NHL player anymore. He was at one time a marginal guy, but he couldn't come up and contribute minutes. It wasn't until the end of the season that you were able to bring up Ben Smith and play him minutes. I think it's absolutely key that whoever these guys are, whether it's eventually somewhere down the line Morin, whether it's Peary, if it ends up being Kruger, that these guys not only come up and suit up and play on a fourth line, but these guys are able to come in, fit in, play good minutes, maybe not your 10 minutes, but good minutes, and make contributions. I think if you get that, I think the Blackhawks are in a good spot. Obviously, you know, Duncan Keith's got to have a great year. Crawford. The obvious things are there, but to me, the garnish of the team, what really brings you up in the conference, the supporting cast, I think those things are key, and also what they do with that flexibility. You talk about the flexibility,
right.
You know, because Brian Campbell could be on this team. If you waive that trade and don't sign, you know, Lopesto, Brian Campbell fits on the roster. So they have that flexibility. They didn't need to get rid of him. They got that flexibility for a reason. I want to know what they use that flexibility on, and I think that'll be key too.
Well, they're going to have to find that out during the course of the year, you know, what do you need? You know, that's what the first 2 months are. But, I mean, they've definitely got some pieces to play with here. I mean, if we say, and that doesn't mean they're right, but if we say they believe in all of McNeil, Peary, and Kruger, well, there's just not three center spots on this team for years to come. You know, you're going to have to pick which ones you want, which ones you think you can move. And they've got some, you know, on the defense back there. You know, they got Olsen back there, but they got Lavin, maybe a couple others. There's not going to be that many openings on the Hawks' defense, you know, years down the road. So they've definitely got some prospects they can play with. I'll be interested to see what they do, too. You know, I dream of Jerome McGinley or Shane Doan. It's not going to happen, but I can dream, can't I? But getting back, I want to get back to Hjalmarsson because I didn't get – mentioned about him. I agree with you about his shot blocking, but I'd also like to see, and what they keep telling us he is, but I've never actually seen evidence, I'd like to see a little more physical presence from him. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but, last year he seemed downright afraid of contact, which led to too many turnovers in the neutral zone, and I don't want him to be Nicholas Cronwall running all over the ice to get on the highlight reel, so I'd like to see him assert himself a little physically a little more than he has, because they keep telling us that he's going to be this physical force, and even when he was good, you know, he was strong and he was willing to, you know, be in contact, but I don't know that he was initiating a lot of it. I think I'd like to see just a little more of that. Again, I don't want him turning into thinking he's Scott Stevens or anything, but I think it could be harder to play against.
Okay, I want to bring, we're going to get to predictions in the Western Conference and ultimately, into June, but I want to bring up this up quickly because I had this thought today, because I was looking at Stan Bowman when Stan Bowman's contract extension was announced. I was charting it out, and of course, in 2 years, this 3-year contract extension kicks in for Bowman, which is it's noteworthy because Joel Quenneville's 3-year contract extension kicks in this year. So that means that in 2013-14 will be the first year of Stan Bowman's new deal, and it will be the last year of Joel Quenneville's current deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's noteworthy, I think, that it was – maybe it's coincidental that it was structured that way. But, I mean, it seems like a funny question to ask now. But just so, Sam, you and I can look back on this in 2 years and have a good laugh
okay.
at ourselves. How much
From
longer,
our shared prison cell, probably, but
yeah.
whatever.
How much longer do you see Joel Quenneville being the head coach, hypothetically, of the Chicago Blackhawks?
That's a good question, you know. I don't know. That's a hard one to say because I don't – you know, I think you'd have to go – this team this year would have to go well out of their way to be bad enough to put them on a hot seat this year. Like, I just – even this – even the median performance from this team this year, and I'm talking like no one has a career year. Everyone's just okay or good, and they're definitely a playoff team. You know, it's not – I don't think – they'd have to – so many things would have to go wrong. So many players would have to be so bad – for them to go through what they went through last year, that I don't see that. And that's the only way, you know, Quenneville would be on the hot seat this year. But this is a guy who grates on people and players, you know, so I don't know. Boy, I don't know, you know, I that's a tough question. I would have to say that he's probably in it for the next 2 years, and after that, anything's questionable. You know, what do Rocky and McDonough think is acceptable? What are their expectations? Are they Stanley Cup or bust? You know, if he goes to the finals and loses, is that considered unacceptable? You know, I honestly don't know. I don't think it is, but you know, if he coaches 2 more years, that's 5 years. That seems like a pretty good run, doesn't it? That seems about par for the course, except for your very top guys.
Joel Quenneville is a tremendous coach. I mean, you just look at his history, at his record. I mean, he's up there right now. You know, with guys that are considered Hall of Famers or guys that should be Hall of Famers. Everybody talks about you got to put Pat Burns in. Look at Pat Burns' career numbers and look at Joel
right.
Quenneville's. If you put Pat Burns in, you got to put Quenneville in. So,
yeah.
And that's right now. So, I mean, go ahead.
I think it's coincidental about, you know, his contract and Bowman's contract. I think Bowman's contract extension is just a little early because organizations don't like to have GMs and coaches go into the last year of a deal. They just don't like it. They don't like, you know, they feel like manager or coaches would lose authority if they have less than a year left. Maybe general managers don't. You go look at the long term if they're managing for a job. So I think an extension at the end of this year would have been, you know, no one would have even batted an eye. The fact that it comes now is a little curious, but I think that's the overriding factor. I don't know that it has much to do with the coach.
I guess to put my own considerable booty on the line. I'm going to say maybe it doesn't even matter the level of success. You know, Quenneville, he's got one Stanley Cup, but he also has a history of having very good teams that don't get over the hump. I don't know. I think if I were just to say come out and say it, I think he's got these next 2 years, and then they hunker down for contract talks, and something bad goes wrong, and I think he's gone. I mean, that's just my hunch.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right.
Yeah. But,
he wants too much money or something like that. Or,
yeah,
or, something.
Or
yeah,
it's let's just say this year it's second round and out, the 2013 it's one round and out or something, or two rounds and out. Maybe that's not acceptable.
I think it would take something like that over 2 years to make his position questionable because, you know, they definitely have the sights set that this team is a contender for the next 2-3, maybe longer. You know, they're thinking conference finals at least, you know, if not more. So it would take something like that, and I can't sit here and say that's what's going to happen. I don't honestly think it is this year. So, but, yeah, he's got at least 2 years, I would think.
That being said, let's do this. NHL this year, this season, who's your first coach to be fired?
First coach to be fired. Well, last year I picked Bruce Boudreau, and for a while there I thought I was going to come up a genius. But, you know, I think the Capitals are improved, so I can't go with him. Boy, that's a tough one. I'm going to go with Murray in Los Angeles. I think they have some awfully big expectations, and I don't even know if they have to be that bad. If they're just boring, I think some people are going to be antsy up there. So I think the Kings will eventually be very, very good and an awfully scary proposition, but I'm going to go with him because I think they might stumble out of the gate a little, and with the expectations they have, you know, people are going to get awfully antsy.
I'm going to go with Elaine Vigneault again. I'm going to say this. Last year was Vancouver's year, and I think had they not had so many injuries, by the end of that series with Boston, their blue line was unrecognizable.
Right.
Had that been different, I don't know that Vancouver doesn't win that cup. But that being said, that was their year, and there were so many expectations. I think it was so emotional for them to finally beat the Blackhawks and get to the finals, and they came back. And aside from losing a couple of guys in free agency, Christian Nierhoff probably being the most notable, they didn't really make any changes.
Right.
And I think that was a huge mistake. I think it was a huge mistake not bringing new blood into that locker room and shaking that thing up a little bit and giving them new life. I don't know what they have to play for coming out of the box. I think it's a huge letdown. And once you get into the season, what's the change that can be made? And the only thing is the coaching. I think even in Vancouver, there are people that are down on Elaine Vigneault now. I'm sticking with it. I don't know that it's – maybe it's not the first one, but I think it's that's the way this thing's going for Vancouver. I don't like their overall outlook. Kessler being hurt right off the bat.
And Raymond. If Kessler and Raymond aren't, I really like Mason Raymond. I don't know if a lot of people do. I think he's a wonderful player. And if the two of them, you know, are going to be out a while and then take a while to get back to what they were, they're not going to roll through the Western Cup. They'll still roll through that division because that division
is a terrible division.
As bad as it can be, and they'll still put up points, but you know, the performances aren't gonna wow anybody. I don't think.
Who in the West are the Hawks' top competition?
Well, the Canucks, just because of that division, they're just going to rack up points because they get to play all those teams so much. You know, I think they're a regular season monster. I don't buy them as a Stanley Cup monster, but you know, the Sharks are also gonna rack up some major regular season points. I like what they did. I don't think it makes them markedly better, like everyone says it will be. I've yet to be convinced about Brent Burns, but the Sharks are always good in the regular season. I don't see any reason that they won't be this time. The Wings, I don't think they're as good as the press wants me to believe. I think the Hawks win the division, but it's not that the Wings are going to miss the playoffs or anything. They're going to be right there. I don't see the Hawks winning the division by anything more than 5 to 7 points. And for reasons we won't be able to explain or understand, you know, the Predators are going to be good. This is just understood. Like, this is just how it's going to be. The games against the Predators are going to be brutal. They're going to be in the race, and we might not think it's logical, but they're just going to be. And once everything shakes out in L.A., that blue line and those two goalies are going to make them awfully tough. I don't know how much the Kings will score. You know, I love what they have down the middle, but I never bought Dustin Penner. I'm not going to buy Dustin Penner now. I like Dustin Brown, but I think he's a second-line guy. You know, there aren't a hell of a lot of, finishers. Simon Gagné might be finished. They're going to be very, very good. They're not going to give up a lot. So those are the teams, those are your top five seeds right there, I think.
Yeah, I think for the Blackhawks and everybody in that Central Division, I think the one thing to look out for this year is those teams beating up on each other, because there's going to be a lot of goals scored in the Central this year, which makes the Predators an interesting case, because they're going to have to win games by shutting down some pretty good offenses. Because if you look across the Central, each team has two lines that can score, and it will be able to score consistently. So I think that's something to watch. What about ultimately who wins the West?
This will be the third straight year I've said it, but I think the Hawks do. I just think they have the pedigree in the postseason. There are a lot of killers on the Hawks, guys who can step up in a playoff series and win you a game or score you a big goal. And do you see that on the Sharks? I don't know that you do. I like Pavelski. I like Couture, but I'm not sold on that blue line yet. Burns is an improvement on Ian White, but is it enough of an improvement? I don't buy it. Mark Edward Vlasic and Doug Murray, these are glorified bums. I think the Canucks, as they're good, but we've seen what going to the Stanley Cup final, how much gas that takes out of the tank, and if Kessler and Raymond aren't up to snuff, do they have just enough energy to get back there? And I think that leaves the Hawks. I'm being a homer. I'm looking through red colored glasses here, but like I see it, the Kings scare me a lot because they could probably shut you down for a series and make it awfully hard to score. But I think the Hawks can win enough 2-1, 3-2 games against that team to advance. It wouldn't be fun. It'd be a torturous series. Great for the neutral, but that's the way I see it. I'm biased. And it's good for my bankroll if the Hawks go far, obviously. But that's how I see it shaking out.
I don't know if we're breaking any news here. I don't want to stomp on any of your stuff there. But do you have a final series and cup prediction yet?
My prediction went up. My finals prediction went up yesterday. I think the Penguins are going to waltz out of that conference if Sidney Crosby is even healthy for half of the season. That team, if Malkin hadn't hurt his knee, I think the Penguins go to the conference finals at least last year. There's no way they lose to Tampa Bay if they have Malkin and interested and healthy. Pardon me one sec. And, that blue line is really, really solid. I'm not Marc-Andre Fleury's biggest fan, but, he seems to play well when it matters most. And I just really like that team. And every other team in the East, except for the Bruins, has some major questions. And, hey, I love that Bruins team. I love watching them. But it took a goaltending performance of the ages for them to get where they were. And there's no way you can count on that again.
Yeah, I think on the Bruins, I think a big thing for me looking at the Bruins, especially in the regular season, is how good is Tyler Seguin going to be?
Right.
How many minutes
are they going to give him?
Just based on the way he played, those tremendous performances in the playoffs, he should get a lot of minutes. But can he perform? I mean, he's not going to do that all season long, but can he be that good? I think if he can be that good, that gives Boston a boost to be at the top of that conference and have Boston in their history of favorable first-round matchups. But, having
Canadians, they're
going to
play the Canadians
that,
in the first round. We know this.
Yeah, but playing the Canadians in the first round again. But I think that's a big storyline for them. And a winner, you've done that yet?
I didn't pick a winner. I think a Hawks-Penguins series would be exactly what Gary Bettman and NBC would have ordered. I couldn't. It depends. It would be healthy. If both teams are fully healthy, that goes to seven games, and it's probably a classic for everyone that we'll talk about for years to come. But I don't know.
It'll be the greatest edition of the Committed Indian ever.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Especially if I get the Pens blog involved with it, because those guys are nuts. But let's worry about that down the road, huh? I gotta get the first one out first without having a stroke.
All right, Sam, let's wrap up here with this question. When the 2011-12 season is over, what are we, Sam, you and I, what are we going to be writing about this Blackhawks team?
I think we're going to be writing about Jonathan Toews' first Hart Trophy. And I think we're going to talk about how not only his, but how it just sort of lifted the team with him. I think he's just going to have a really big year this year, and we know the media loves him. And I think we'll be talking about how the mainstream media is talking about how Jonathan Toews just put this team on his back, and it was his play that inspired them to the dizzying heights I think they might get to. I think that will probably be the lead story of whatever happens, assuming they don't win, which I can't come out and say they will for sure, but I think that's the sure bet.
I think as far as trophies, I think Keith wins his second Norris and Toews gets the Selke.
Okay.
I don't know about the Hart, but those are some good things. Well, thanks a lot, Sam, for doing this again. It's SecondCityHockey.com, the Committed Indian. You could get all the information there. You could also buy it outside the United Center before every home game, but information online if you want it in your inbox in the afternoon and the day of games, and you can screw off at work and just read The Committed Indian. You can do that,
exactly.
too.
I'm happy to help send productivity right into the toilet, so it's what I do best.
That's what SecondCityHockey.com does, doesn't it?
I think that's our main function.
And then, of course, NBC, Madhouse Enforcer. NBCChicago.com/blogs/Madhouse-Enforcer. That's where you can get them. Sam, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Chris. Always a pleasure.
All right, everybody, thanks for listening. Next time, whenever that is, we'll talk. Good night, everybody.